Good evening and welcome to the extended Friday edition of the KRFP Evening Report. On today's show, the Idaho House passes the Taxpayer Money for Private Schools bill from Representative Wendy Horman. With contentious debate, we'll hear some of that debate, plus new bills in the legislature to sever Idaho's ties with the University of Washington Medical School, and Republican Representative Barbara Ehart's new sex ed opt-in bill would cover any other course that has sexual content. Plus, Washington Democrats push back from right-wing viral attacks over committee votes on immediate parent notification of sexual misconduct at school. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. But first, world headlines from FSN and the Public News Service and a roundup of regional news.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Nina Maria Potts of the latest world news. Hamas has released the names of three hostages to be freed in Gaza on Saturday in exchange for Palestinian prisoners detained by Israel. They are Eli Sharabi, Ohad Ben-Ami, and Or Levy. 18 hostages have been freed since the ceasefire began on the 19th of January. Israel has released 383 prisoners in return. Hamas says another 183 are to be freed on Saturday. U.S. President Donald Trump says he'll announce reciprocal tariffs on several countries next week. His comments came during a bilateral meeting with Japanese Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba in Washington. More than 6 million people could die from HIV and AIDS in the next 4 years, according to the United Nations AIDS Agency, should U.S. President Donald Trump pull global funding. While there's currently a waiver on HIV/AIDS programs following Trump's announcement of foreign aid funding freezes, the UN says there remains widespread confusion that's already resulted in several job cuts. Jody Jacobs has more.
The United Nations HIV/AIDS Agency, or UNAIDS, says there's widespread confusion following Donald Trump's executive order. The agency reports disruptions to life-saving medication in several parts of the world. UNAIDS Deputy Executive Director Christine Steglin.
Any penny, any cut, any pause will matter for all of us. 50% of our own funding comes from the U.S. government.
Foreign aid donations from the U.S. are on hold for 90 days, with PEPFAR, the U.S.'s emergency plan for AIDS relief, being exempt for now. It's the world's largest HIV/AIDS program. Now UNAIDS says if these funding cuts go ahead, they predict a 400% increase in AIDS deaths between 2025 and 2029. Jody Jacobs, New York.
The International Criminal Court has condemned the U.S. president's decision to impose sanctions on its staff. Donald Trump has accused the court of illegitimate and baseless actions against the U.S. and Israel. Europe correspondent William Denzelow reports.
In a statement, the ICC says that the U.S. executive order seeks to harm its independent and impartial judicial work. It adds that the court will continue to provide justice and hope to millions of innocent victims of atrocities around the world. Back in November, the ICC issued an arrest warrant for Israel's prime minister over alleged war crimes committed in Gaza. Benjamin Netanyahu denies this and calls the ICC corrupt and anti-Semitic. The ICC is calling on its 125 members, civil society and all nations to stand united for justice and fundamental human rights. William Denslow, Brussels.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
As the Trump administration ramps up arrests of undocumented immigrants, some in Nevada are choosing to skip work or keep their children home from school. On Wednesday, a federal judge blocked President Donald Trump's attempt to ban birthright citizenship for children of undocumented immigrants. But as real fear plagues communities in Nevada and across the country, the Silver State's nine-member Latino caucus says they won't stay complacent. Assemblywoman and caucus chair Cecilia Gonzalez says Trump's attack on immigrant families is personal for her. That's why she's introducing the Family Unity Support Act.
This bill is seeking to ensure the protections of children whose parents may be facing deportation proceedings, so it ensures that their overall mental, scholarly, and legal well-being are taken care of by the state.
The bill's final details are still being worked out. The White House has said the roundups taking place nationwide are targeting immigrants with criminal records, but some with no record have also been detained. Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, has said any potential raids on schools would be assessed on a case-by-case basis and determined by national security or public safety threats. Selena Torres-Fawcett, who is also part of the Nevada Latino Caucus, says they'll be looking at every policy to ensure Nevada children and their families stay safe, but warns that with immigration being such a hot-button issue, more directives and actions from the White House are likely to follow.
Well, I think we're going to continue to see the federal government and President Trump inciting fear and hate in our schools and our communities, and we will continue to fight back in every way that we can.
In response to the federal government's actions pertaining to immigrant communities, the ACLU of Nevada has created an online portal for Nevadans to report civil liberties and civil rights violations of immigrants in the Silver State. For Nevada News Service, I'm Alex Gonzalez. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The city of Albuquerque and local business partners have launched a Know Your Rights campaign to help immigrants navigate the Trump administration's deportation crackdown on undocumented individuals. Albuquerque Mayor Tim Keller says over the next few weeks, community members will have multiple opportunities to get helpful information. He says many have expressed fear and concern about the recent federal orders, but noted that Albuquerque is an immigrant-friendly city.
There's no record keeping of anyone's history in general, let alone your immigration status. And also, this applies to police and fire. Police officers are not allowed to ask for your immigration status, and they're also not allowed to track if they find out your immigration status.
Adding to fears posed by legitimate immigration and custom enforcement agents, impersonation cases have been reported in at least three states, where men posing as ICE agents targeted and harassed people of color, threatening them with deportation. Rachel Lazar leads El Centro, an immigrant advocacy group. As surveillance and arrests ramp up, she reminds business owners and their employees that ICE agents need a search warrant to enter spaces with signage that says private, including a restaurant's kitchen or restroom. She encourages all business owners to have a plan.
And it should be a company-wide plan or an organization-wide plan for how to respond to ICE activity. We recommend you appoint at least one person per shift within your company who will know how to respond.
The Know Your Rights series kicked off with a presentation for business owners, but the remainder of the free webinar series will focus on individuals and community groups. Sessions will be held every Wednesday through March 12th. More information is at abq.gov/OIRA. This is Roz Brown, New Mexico News Connection.
Immigrant advocates in Florida are ramping up efforts to help families navigate President Donald Trump's new immigration orders, which have increased fear and uncertainty in communities across the Sunshine State. The Florida Immigrant Coalition has been holding legal workshops, launched a Know Your Rights webpage, and operates a statewide immigration hotline to provide resources for those at risk of deportation. With reports of immigration and customs enforcement raids across Florida, Adriana Rivera, Director of Communications at FLIC, said the coalition is working to ensure that immigrant families understand their constitutional rights regardless of immigration status.
There is an element of racial profiling that we are witnessing where, you know, even the sole purpose of you speaking a different language has gotten people detained.
The organization also urges immigrants to carry written scripts asserting their rights, particularly for children who may be questioned at school. Trump's executive orders have raised concerns about increased ICE access to schools, hospitals, and other public spaces where enforcement actions were previously restricted. In some Florida school districts, officials have been instructed to cooperate with ICE agents even if they refuse to allow parental notification before detaining a student. Rivera says all families should be making a plan.
If you are a U.S. citizen, but you speak a different language, but you look a certain way, or you pray differently than, you know, you're not a Christian, basically, you should be thinking, well, what happens if this situation occurs, if that situation occurs?
As enforcement actions escalate, advocates urge families to consult immigration lawyers as soon as possible, particularly those with temporary protected status or deferred action for childhood arrivals, as Trump's policies threaten to roll back those protections. This is Tremel Gomes for Florida News Connection.
A South Dakota House committee takes up a controversial bill today that would require all public school districts in the state to display the Ten Commandments in each classroom. The bill, which narrowly cleared the Senate last week, also contains provisions that would require the Ten Commandments be taught in civics classes. Opponents say the mandate crosses the line when it comes to separation of church and state. In the recent debate, Republican Senator Stephanie Sauter of Bryant, a former teacher, said her biggest issue was the loss of local control.
This bill, which will remove the school's freedom of choice to decide what's best for the students and the district, and it'll also take away a parent's freedom to challenge the decision.
Sauter voted against the measure, which ended up passing the Senate by a single vote. Backers of the bill say it's an important part of learning U.S. history. But opponents like Sauter say current teaching already makes mention of the commandments when covering various religions. Louisiana recently became the first state to adopt this requirement, but it's being challenged in court. Opponents in South Dakota warn of similar litigation here if this bill crosses the finish line. But supporters like Sioux Falls Republican Senator Sue Peterson suggest the concerns about the words being on display are overblown.
Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not kill. I don't think that hurts anything. In fact, I think it's helpful.
But other lawmakers who say they adhere to the same guiding principles question whether this mandate would solve any broader issue. Beyond Louisiana and the South Dakota proposal, a handful of other conservative states are considering similar measures, most notably Texas. This is Mike Moen for Greater Dakota News Service.
An endangered bat species has been detected in southeastern Arizona. Researchers say the discovery of the Mexican longnose bat in the Grand Canyon State expands the known range of these animals. They're important pollinators for desert plants such as Kalmner cactus and agave. Kristen Lear with Bat Conservation International says knowing that this endangered species has been found in Arizona opens up new avenues for research and conservation.
Some of the work for the conservation of the species for the Mexican longnose bat are really two things. One is roost protection, finding the caves, the mines, or wherever this bat is roosting along their migratory route and protecting those roosts. And then the second aspect is maintaining healthy foraging habitats.
Lear says the discovery of the tiny bat was made possible as project participants collected what's called environmental DNA. Or eDNA, by swabbing hummingbird feeders that bats also feed on. When bats feed, they leave traces of DNA behind through their saliva, which can then be analyzed. Lear adds that as bats continue to struggle to survive because of disease and habitat loss, it's important to study them using non-invasive methods. Mexican longnose bats migrate annually from south-central Mexico to the southwestern U.S., spending the summer months in southwest Texas and also in the boot heel of New Mexico. Lear says the bat's appearance in the Grand Canyon State could be a sign of the impacts climate change could be having on migratory practices.
We're seeing more bat species using the edge of their ranges in areas that they aren't usually found. And so that could be what's happening here, is that climate change modeling with the agave plants that are their food sources, all of the modeling shows that that area is actually going to become more important for these bats in the future.
Lear says surveys have also increased in recent years, and it's possible the Mexican longnose bat has been in southeastern Arizona in low numbers, but simply hadn't been detected yet. Lear wants to encourage Arizonans to plant native night-blooming plants, which attract insects for insectivorous bats to eat, and agaves for the nectar-feeding species like the Mexican longnose bat. For Arizona News Connection, I'm Alex Gonzalez.
And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Washington State University Board of Regents voted yesterday to hire Elizabeth Cantwell as the school's first female president. Elizabeth Betsy Cantwell will come to Pullman from Utah State University, where she has been president since August 2023. Cantwell will assume the duties of President Kirk Schulz as WSU's 12th president on April 1st. Cantwell's annual salary will be $735,000. According to the Lewiston Tribune, Washington State University Board of Regents Chair Lisa Kioho Kaloli Shower said Cantwell oversaw an annual budget of $1.3 million at Utah State, including a $495 million investment in research expenditures. Shower noted Cantwell will face challenges at WSU despite her experience in research and innovation, especially in light of President Donald Trump's threats to cut funding for research and development, as well as affirmative action and DEI programs. Schauer said they are, quote, facing changes and implications to our research, to our communities that require thinking that's broad and big and a commitment to our value. I just want to acknowledge that while this is an exciting moment, there is a lot happening outside of this room. Prior to Utah State, Cantwell held research and leadership posts at the University of Arizona and Arizona State University. Cantwell said she will emphasize serving students and the public at large. She said, as a land-grant university, WSU faces a pivotal moment with the current challenges and potential opportunities. Cantwell said, as we're all kind of going into that future of higher ed where you can see the kind of bumps in the road, and some of them are pretty big bumps, I truly believe that land grants will be enduring. We have to be here in 100 years. The Idaho House voted 42-18 today in favor of a bill from Republican Representative Wendy Horman of Idaho Falls that would send taxpayer money to private and religious schools through tax breaks for parents who have children in private schools or who homeschool. The legislation would award up to $50 million in tax credits per year for education costs in increments of $5,000 per student for private school tuition. The payouts can be as high as $7,500 per year for students with disabilities. The Idaho Education News reports 19 Republicans and 9 Democrats voted against House Bill 93, meaning the vote falls 4 votes short of a two-thirds veto-proof majority, meaning Governor Brad Little could have the final say. District 6 legislators were split, with Republican Brandon Mitchell of Moscow voting in favor and Republican Representative Lori McCann of Lewiston voting against. The debate on the House floor was contentious at times, with some opponents arguing the oversight of private schools is insufficient and others arguing the benefits would only go to parents who are wealthy enough to afford private schools in the first place, since the $5,000 benefit is not enough to cover private school tuition. The bill now heads to the Senate side. We'll hear some of the debate on the House floor later in tonight's program. Republican Representative Barbara Ehart of Idaho Falls introduced her sex ed parental opt-in bill in the House Education Committee today, saying opt-out has not worked. The bill is similar to those from Ehart that failed in previous years, except this year's bill would require parents to opt in to any class that has sexual content, not just sex ed classes. Here is Barbara Ehart.
It returns the control to literally the parents on a subject matter that, as I said in 2019 and 2021, we would see coming before our schools such an increased basis that we wouldn't be able to keep up for Idaho, and that is what we have found is happening. Let me just tell you a couple other things. This is about consent, not content. I want to be very clear. This does not prevent content from being taught. It's about the consent of the parent. Very different. In a hearing, assuming that I would get that, I will explain to you how our own statutes really define those rights as a parent and why this is important for us to be able to continue to make sure those rights, as defined in our state statutes, are enforced. The opt-out that most districts currently have leaves the responsibility with the student, meaning to make sure they take whatever information home and also bring it back. The opt-in clearly leaves that responsibility with the adults where it should be.
That was Republican Representative Barbara Ehart of Idaho Falls. There were signs of opposition in the House Education Committee. Representative Lance Klo of Twin Falls was concerned about the need to opt students in for classes other than sex ed.
This is in the sexual education, but if there was an art class and they had some pictures, not of David, but is this going to cover other classes besides just a sexual education class?
Representative Ehart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good representative. This is, I know with this language, not this language, but as we put it together, it can get a little confusing. This doesn't touch sex ed. And so this is, the language is designed for the sexuality that seems to happen in English and math and history. It just keeps popping up in the strangest places. So in the case of somebody who might be engaging in an art class, for example, and, you know, maybe viewing that statue of David, if it wasn't about sexual conduct, sexual pleasure, sexual intimacy, abuse and violence and the rest of the things up there is defined or what defines human sexuality, there would not be that problem. And so I tried, representative, if you were the chairman and the first time I brought it, we did, and that might be what you were thinking, I did include the sex ed. The second time, as we looked at it more closely, we gave the sex ed, don't even touch the sex ed because of the statutes that we currently have that I think really protect the direction of sexual education in Idaho.
Follow up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But this section of Code 33.16.11 that we're amending says excuses children from instruction in sexual education. But you gave an example of a piece of art. And so I'm just curious and making sure that definition is for use in the actual sexual education classes and not other classes that might drift into things that might have art included. Or I just wanted to make sure.
I'm
Representative Hart.
Mr. Chairman, good representative, will you, I think we're talking past, I'm not changing anything with sex ed. So this would reference all other classes. Sex ed literally has to, according to our statutes, can't go there anyway.
The section that you're amending, and I'm reading this from your RS, is 33-1611. You made other amendments too. It says excusing children from instruction in sex education. And then you made that amendment, the amendment is specifically and narrowly, and then you gave that example. And I'm thinking, how often in a sexual education class would that come up? Are we expanding this beyond sexual education, or
okay.
That's what I'm trying to find out.
Mr. Yeah. Chairman,
mm-hmm.
And good representative, no, this and two, it specifically says instruction that addresses human sexuality. And Section 1 specifically addresses sex ed.
That's Republican Representative Barbara Ehart of Idaho Falls in an exchange with Republican Representative Lance Klo of Twin Falls. Democrat Monica Church of Boise also had concerns about the opt-in for classes other than sex ed and proposed sending the bill back to the sponsor for amendment.
I'm very concerned that to get consent for all of the things mentioned in this bill would make it very difficult to teach about David, to teach about very important Supreme Court cases. You know, even recently I watched one of our PragerU videos on the Holocaust, and it talked about rape. And so I would be concerned, and I am absolutely willing to work with you if I could move for an alternative motion to send it back to the sponsor in order to kind of talk through some of the ways that we can eliminate the content and make sure that it's consent.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Representative Church. We have an alternate motion to send the RS back to the sponsor. Any further discussion or motions, committee? Representative Garner.
Chairman Pickett and Representative Ehart, I think I will be supporting the alternative motion simply because it you've got it in the section where it deals with sex ed, and yet you say that it's going into other courses in the classrooms. And I can see a big problem in, like, the literature and art and I do believe we have a system already in place where the parents can opt out. And surely if the parents are exercising their right to be involved and know what's being taught in their schools, which they are encouraged to do so by the school boards, that they can go down and make a decision on their own.
The Education Committee voted against Representative Church's proposed amendment and then voted to introduce Ehart's bill, meaning the committee will hold a full public hearing on it in a few days. Idaho Republicans House Speaker Mike Moyle of Starr and Senate Education Committee Chair Dave Lent of Idaho Falls have introduced a bill to sever ties with the University of Washington's medical school program known as WAMI, spelled W-W-A-M-I. The House Education Committee voted unanimously to introduce the measure today. The measure would end the University of Idaho's 53-year relationship with the University of Washington. The measure would force the Idaho State Board of Education to begin a relationship by 2027 to 2028 school year with two unnamed regional medical schools, possibly the Idaho College of Osteopathic Medicine in Meridian, which is in a partnership with Idaho State University, or possibly the University of Utah Medical School. Idaho spends $3 million per year to subsidize 40 medical school seats at WAMI. Moyle and Lent say their bill outlines an exit strategy from the WAMI program, including the provision to end the subsidy of the partnership with the program after the 2026 to 2027 school year. Lawmakers have been scrutinizing the WAMI program since 2022, when they passed a law requiring the program's graduates to practice in Idaho for at least 4 years. Supporters of the bill point to capacity issues with the WAMI program, arguing WAMI rebuffed Idaho education officials when they sought to have more students in the program. Republican Representative Dustin Manwaring of Pocatello, who co-sponsored the bill, made it clear the measure would terminate the partnership with the University of Washington. University of Idaho spokesperson Jody Walker said the university is considering other options. Walker said the UI, quote, will continue to work with the State Board of Education and the legislature to meet the health care needs of Idaho in a way that best fits Idaho. House Education Committee members expressed several concerns about the transition from the WAMI program. Democrat Monica Church of Boise said she has already heard from doctors who are concerned about which medical school will partner with the UI. Republican Representative Jack Nelson of Jerome said he is worried about losing capacity. Nelson said, "I would hate to get caught in the middle." The Idaho Supreme Court yesterday upheld former Representative Aaron Von Ellinger's rape conviction. Ellinger's appeal asked the court to vacate the conviction and sentence based on evidence from the initial trial in 2022, in which the jury found Von Ellinger, a Republican state lawmaker from Lewiston, guilty of raping a 19-year-old legislative intern in 2021. According to the Lewiston Tribune, Von Ellinger's appeal centered around a forensic nurse's testimony who defense attorney said assisted the intern after the rape and during the trial. The nurse repeated the statements she heard from the intern to jurors, which prosecutors heavily relied on to get a conviction. Defense attorneys say that was hearsay evidence and should have been thrown out as a violation of Von Ellinger's Sixth Amendment rights. Supreme Court Chief Justice Gary Moeller said Von Ellinger failed to object to the nurse's testimony at trial and his lawyer's objections came too late. You're listening to KRFP Moscow Pullman. This is the KRFP Evening Report. Stay tuned for more.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by
Friends of the Clearwater, a 501c3 environmental nonprofit dedicated to protecting your public lands. FOC is defending the wildlands, wildlife, and waterways of north central Idaho for future generations. Friendsoftheclearwater.org.
For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.
The Moscow City Council received positive news that Coast Transit would be expanding into Moscow, and an insurance problem that had caused Smart Transit to suspend service for 3 days had been cleared up. Council on Aging and Human Services Director Paige Collins told the City Council last night their Colfax-based Coast Transit program has been lining up financing to offer a new free fixed-schedule bus service to Moscow, Pullman, Albion, and Colfax starting in July. Here's Paige Collins.
Coast has submitted an application to Washington State Department of Transportation for a free shuttle service that would run Colfax, Albion, Pullman, and Moscow 6 days a week from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. The Palouse Regional Transportation Planning Organization, it's a very big rated this project for WashDOT at an A project. So that basically means it should be funded. Of course, I'm not counting my chickens until I see a contract, but it does appear that it's going to be funded. That would start July 1st, which is very exciting. We're doing a lot of work right now getting ready for this. The contracts with WashDOT provide 95% of the cost of the operations for this shuttle, and 80% of the capital we need to buy two new buses. So in essence, we needed to find $46,000 for operations, and we need to find $59,000 for the two buses. Big buses, the 14-passenger buses, are very expensive right now. We are down to needing only $13,000 and change at this moment. So I come here hoping we might convince you to make even the smallest donation towards this.
Collins said the bus service is designed to serve people who need transportation to and from medical appointments.
Moscow is the only place for people to receive dialysis in our area, and there is a huge need for dialysis. And so we have a limited number of dialysis clients we can take, because although we don't prioritize one ride over the other, dialysis is a life-sustaining treatment, and so we take that very seriously. And when we accept a dialysis client, we want to make sure that they're getting to dialysis and that they don't have to worry about that. So we're only able to accept so many. So this shuttle system will also open that up for people to be able to receive that without having to worry about scheduling or whether they're going to have a ride, because it will be regular and accessible to them as long as they don't need that ADA accessibility.
That was Council on Aging and Human Services Director Paige Collins. Mayor Art Bedke told Collins Coast should put together a financing spreadsheet which could help the City Council make a decision on offering funding for some of the remaining $13,000 needed to start the project. Councilmember Haley Lewis asked about whether there would be recurring costs beyond the first year of the project that the city would be obliged to pay for. Collins replied after the second year, they could roll funding into Coast Transit's regular operations. In other public transportation news, Moscow free bus service Smart Transit did not run Friday, Saturday, or yesterday because of an issue with their insurance carrier. Moscow Councilmember Bryce Blankenship asked fellow Councilmember Haley Lewis when the issue might be resolved.
Is service resuming soon?
Yes.
Can we just make that that statement definitive for people listening?
Let me pull up the press release was getting ready to
It went out.
I'm looking
tomorrow morning.
Yeah, tomorrow morning. Great.
Resuming normal operations. There's a lot of back and forth. But yes, as of 4:48, we are back to normal operations. So that meant no scheduled service on Friday, Saturday, or today. But it meant everyone came in as scheduled. We had things for everyone to work on.
Councilmember Haley Lewis.
My name is Alice Connor, and this is Zoe. Zoe is part of my family and lives indoors. In 2005, two dogs who had spent most of their lives chained outdoors killed my two-year-old cousin, Jonathan. Jonathan loved dogs, and he had no idea how dangerous chained dogs could be. Chained dogs are three times more likely to attack people because they don't get the companionship and exercise they need and crave, and that can frustrate them and drive them crazy. For your family's sake and for your dogs, please never chain your dog.
Visit PETA.org.
The Idaho House voted 42-18 today in favor of a bill from Republican Representative Wendy Horman of Idaho Falls that would send taxpayer money to private and religious schools through tax breaks for parents who have children in private schools or who homeschool. The legislation would award up to $50 million in tax credits per year for education costs in increments of $5,000 per student for private school tuition. The payouts can be as high as $7,500 for students with disabilities. The Idaho Education News reports 19 Republicans and 9 Democrats voted against House Bill 93 today, meaning the vote falls 4 votes short of a 2/3 veto-proof majority, meaning Governor Brad Little could have the final say. Herman's bill passed 8-7 in the House Revenue and Taxation Committee earlier in the week. District 6 legislators were split in today's vote, with Republican Brandon Mitchell of Moscow voting in favor and Republican Representative Lori McCann of Lewiston voting against. The debate on the House floor was contentious at times, with some opponents arguing the oversight of private schools is insufficient and others arguing the benefits would only go to parents who are wealthy enough to afford private schools in the first place, since the $5,000 benefit is not enough to cover typical private school tuition. The bill now heads to the Senate side. Here is some of the debate in the House today, starting with Republican Representative Wendy Horman of Idaho Falls.
Many of you know or are about to learn that I first ran for elected office because I care about every single child having the opportunity for an excellent education, no matter where they're learning. So, the short version of this bill, Mr. Speaker, is that beginning in the 2025 tax year, parents could receive a refundable tax credit of up to $5,000 per child, $7,500 for a child with a disability. Eligible students are full-time Idaho residents from the age of 5 to 18, except for students with disabilities, which is the age of 5 to 21. A credit cannot be claimed for any semester in which the student is enrolled either full or part-time in a public school. Part-time in Idaho is defined as 2.5 hours. So if you're a homeschool student taking one or two courses at your public school for choir, orchestra, or shop, ballroom, that's still allowed under this bill. Qualified expenses do include K-12 tuition and fees for attending a non-public school, tutoring, nationally standardized tests, assessment for college admission, AP, and textbooks, curricula, and specific transportation costs to and from an academic instruction setting. So as with public schools and non-public school students right now, per current law, students must receive instruction in English, math, history, and science. It's existing law. And these families that apply to this, to receive this refundable tax credit, families below 300% of the federal poverty limit get first priority on the tax credit. That's about 95,000 gross, about 65,000 roughly for adjusted gross. And if there are funds left over after those students below the 300% level of the federal poverty limit, then it will be open to families of any income. I want to emphasize that this bill does not take any funds away from public schools. There is a $50 million cap on this bill. I chair the Appropriations Committee. I'm not a fan of budget-busting bills. This bill is capped and cannot change, increase or decrease, unless a future legislature changes the law. The penalty for misusing this program is tax fraud, which includes up to a felony charge, as with any other tax fraud. Some important transparency measures in this bill are reporting, as published by the Tax Commission, on the amount of credits claimed and remaining, as well as extensive reporting that is depersonalized but given to us in the aggregate on the number of people participating, the average amount awarded, and the geographic area of the applicants. Mr. Speaker, that is a short summary of the bill, but I would be happy to stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, good lady. You've heard the motion. Is there further debate on the motion? Hearing none?
Oh, what
are you being so shy for? Good lady from 19.
I'm still learning. As you could see earlier, I'm like, it's just like a public school, right? Like, when do you go to do, a certain thing? You're just always, trying to find that time. So,
just fine, and we enjoy the entertainment. The lady has the floor to build the bill.
You say that now. Mr. Speaker, to debate the bill.
Good lady has the floor.
Thank you. In front of you today are examples of private schools in Idaho and their honest assessment of what they are able to provide as far as students with individualized needs. These schools cannot, and in many cases will not, provide certain individualized education for our students. And when I say qualifying education, when I say qualifying needs, I am talking about those things that are constitutionally required to determine if a child or any American is in needing of protections individually and apart from the general will of the public. And so this is our way to assure that public goods do not discriminate. Right? Having a lower water fountain is a great example. And I believe that these private schools want to educate all children. It is not a lack of love of educating children that leads them to create these policies. It's a lack of resources, it's a lack of available workforce, and it's bottom lines. The point is, the students that will be not best served by this bill are Idaho's children and families with exceptional needs, and that should make us pause. To admit that a child has a need that is different and unique, like a visual impairment or a young child that's had multiple concussions due to playing sports, to admit a child should be educated differently than their peers for any reason means that the constitutional requirement is that we must provide an equal opportunity when education comes into play. And thank goodness, because just as the good lady from 33 reminded us earlier in the week, the value of Title IX in mandating schools provide an opportunity for women and girls to play sports, so too does the Constitution require us to provide an equal opportunity to educate all children, whether they are experiencing a learning disorder like dyslexia or a genetic diagnosis like MS, simply learning how to behave appropriately in society, all children. $7,500 will not cover these. To put into context, let me tell you about a public school team for a student who experienced a diagnosis by their family doctor for hearing loss due to an accident, a car accident that was not their fault. To make sure that the student and family knew that they were every bit a part of our community, an educational support team is created. And this educational support team varies depending on what you're doing or what the child needs. It's parents and doctors, it's administrators, it's specialists, it's everyone that you can possibly imagine. And unlike what you might be reading from one of the good ladies from, 24, put out, school districts are required, if a family cannot afford a specialist, to provide a specialist, neurologist, specialist in hearing and mobility, in order to make sure that every child is served. And so this young student that came with a hearing impairment due to an accident that was not their fault came from one of the private schools, one of the very elite, wonderful, long-standing private schools in this valley, who could not afford to give them the kind of educational needs that they needed. And so for an entire year, I wore a microphone every single day that was attached to hearing aids to make sure that that child could hear. Just one of the 160 children I see every day. Of course, a parent wants a child to succeed more than anyone else. As a good gentleman from 22 has said time and time again, but parents need support. And that is the job of an Idaho publicly funded school, to support every child, every family, no matter what. And because every child matters, and let me repeat that, every child matters, When we're talking about public money going to education, we must assure that every child can succeed. And our private schools have said time and time again, they just can't do it. They can't afford it. It's impossible. There is no way to provide equal opportunity to education for every child. That is our burden as a government, to make sure that nobody is left behind. And to drive home the point, I'll tell you one final story. As many of you know, I co-owned a private school, a micro school, created an LLC, retrofitted a garage apartment, the whole deal. During pandemic, my husband and I are both public school teachers, and we had to be online every single day, and we could not help our child. It was devastating. The masks, the stress, the whole thing, it was devastating. And so we started our own school with a bunch of families in the neighborhood, and it was awesome. One of the children, though, has dyslexia, and the teacher that we hired, board-certified, state-licensed Idaho teacher, was just ill-equipped to handle that on her own. So that child in the morning went to the public school and received specialized education and then came back in the afternoon to our pod, and it worked. Now, it was expensive. I'm not going to lie, it was expensive. And we struggled. We had to dip into our 529 savings plan. We had to get second jobs. We had to skimp and we had to save, but we did it. And at the end of the day, after 2 years, my daughter learned a lesson. And it wasn't that the government provides, it was that her parents provided. And we made it work. Now today she's back in the public schools, doing great. But we also have a tutor for SAT prep. We've got a Spanish tutor. And these are things that we're doing because we love her. And like the good gentleman from 22 reminds us, parents know best. But under no circumstance would I ask the taxpayers of Idaho or any of you to pay for that. And so in closing, my advice is that this bill does not serve all students. And that if we really want to give parents the choice to educate every child, we should make their lives a little more affordable. We should really push our 529s, and we should make sure that families make those decisions. Thank you.
For the debate on the motion, good gentleman, 33.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you. People of the committee, of this body, I just want to mention a few things, real simple. A couple years ago, I ran a bill through here that specifically was working. We couldn't prohibit the behaviors in the private schools because we didn't have any jurisdiction over them. So there was stuff that we did related to isolation, seclusion, the way they treated kids. And I was like, well, we can't regulate private schools, so we're not gonna. And if, now if we're gonna give them money, it's highly concerning to me that we wouldn't regulate those kind of things and make sure that those kids, because if you know me, I'm somebody who's always looking out for the safety of the kids and making sure that there's proper things going on. I'm a huge fan of background checks. I, as a professional person who's worked with children my entire career, I've had to be background checked almost annually to make sure that I'm a safe person to work with those kids. And when there's no provision in there that even allows for that, it bothers me a lot because we've had to fire people that we maybe offered a provisional position to when we found out in their background that they had had a crime against children or something, that later we would have just hired them because they seemed like an awesome person at the time. So there's things like that that relate to specifically to safety, especially how we treat the kids in a particular school. I don't think I want them isolating and secluding kids and doing things that are contrary to some of the behavioral health kind of interventions we would do in the work that I do on a regular basis. So I'd be highly concerned when we don't have any regulatory power and we allow them to have some funding to do that work. So that's why I would be in opposition to this bill. Thank you.
Further debate on the motion. Good gentleman, 28.
Thank you, good speaker. I rise to debate them in opposition of this bill.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, good speaker. Honorable members of the body, I have been overwhelmed with emails from my constituents on this bill, and they all have made sure that I am aware that this is an enlargement of government, which they are adamantly against. If you look at page 1, line 22 and 23 of this bill, this creates a new government program inside the State Tax Commission. This is a program that will raise a cost to our taxpayers and grow government. In the fiscal note, they notice that they say that there's two employees that they're looking for that will take care of this. Well, the Tax Commission is looking for those employees probably because they need them in their already assigned duties. This will grow government, and it will infect our taxpayers and our local government, local residents in our communities. The rising costs, and it will continue to grow. Long-term government and dependency on that system will also continue to grow. How do you tell someone when you reach the cap, simply because they didn't file their tax notices online on time, as this bill has a date in it, that they cannot be eligible for this program? This program will grow, and the government will grow. So I ask you fervently to join me with a red light.
And you're listening to some of the debate in the Idaho House today. The House voted 42-18 in favor of a bill from Republican Representative Wendy Horman of Idaho Falls that would send taxpayer money to private and religious schools through tax breaks for parents who have children in private schools or who homeschool. The legislation would award up to $50 million in the next fiscal year in tax credits for education costs in increments of $5,000 per student for private school tuition, and the payouts could be $7,500 for a student with disabilities. We're going to continue with some more excerpts from the House floor debate today in just a moment. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman. This is the extended Friday edition of the KRFP Evening Report.
Love's Kombucha is proud to support KRFP Radio Free Moscow. Love's Kombucha is a fun, lively, fermented probiotic tea that is craft brewed right here in Moscow. For more information, visit loveskombucha.com.
Well, we have more of the debate from the House floor, starting with Republican Representative Stephanie Jo Mickelson of Idaho Falls, followed by Republican Josh Tanner of Eagle, who is in favor of the bill. And he'll be followed by Republican Lucas Kaler of Caldwell, and then a representative from District 25, probably Representative Lance Klo of Twin Falls.
I wonder when FDR started the New Deal if he wondered that it would turn out to what we have today. In the bill, on page 2, it talks about the qualifications, and then it also talks about the things that are not going to be qualified. But then it does not explain how the State Tax Commission is then going to go and double check to make sure people aren't double dipping in the empowering parents and this tax credit. There's also nothing in this bill that says that they can't stack and combine different programs. So they would, first off, they could get the $5,000 tax credit, then they could get the $2,500 Advanced Opportunities Program. So we would be sending out all kinds of money that wouldn't necessarily show how fiscally responsible we are. It's also, there's an excess of payouts. They could get $5,000 from the grant. A family of three could get $5,000 for each child from the grant. They could get the empowering parents, because there's no mechanism to make sure that they're not doing both. Then they could get $2,500 for the advanced opportunities. So a family with three children could get over $25,000 of our tax dollars just for their children. This bill has a lack of oversight. I think we need to be very careful that we stop triple dipping, and we make sure that there are appropriate guardrails in this bill to make sure that the taxpayers are protected, because that is one of our responsibilities. I would submit to you that this is a bill that could create a huge problem with fraud. There is nothing conservative in this bill, and I hope that you'll join me in voting against House Bill 93.
Third debate on the motion. Good gentleman from 14.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Debate in favor.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you. I think there's been some interesting points actually made at this point in time within the debate. We have talked about the equal opportunity from the good lady from 19, as well as the destruction that was done of COVID-19. Well, I've been a blessed person I've been blessed in my life when it comes to the financial aspect. I've been able to actually make choices that a lot of other people have not been able to make. And I've been able to put my kids through private school almost their entire lives. We've tried public school. And I can tell you from what it met with my family, it just did not seem to work out very well. We attempted a charter school at one point in time, thinking that those might be a good fit. And they honestly just were not a good fit for my family. And I was blessed to be able to make that choice, but not every family is actually blessed to be able to make that choice. Now we're talking about taxpayer money, and we're talking about accountability. It is their money. This isn't a government program we're actually spending on. We're actually giving it back to the people of Idaho. That is their money. And I think that's a misnotion that we're actually having, that all of a sudden we're now protecting their money in some way. No, this is their money that we're saying that they have the right to actually go decide what they actually want to do and how they want to educate their kids. What we've seen during the destruction of COVID-19, we didn't get to see as a family, for my family, because where we were at school, they didn't miss a beat. We didn't have to wear masks. We didn't have to deal with any of the other stuff. We really didn't even have a problem that actually went on. It was like normal life. And where all the other kids that live around us, it was mass chaos. Kids run around the neighborhood all the time. Parents are trying to figure out how to not work to watch their kids. And our kids got actually educated during it. So to say that I am the only one that because of that I've been financially able to be able to do this is ridiculous, because it is not a choice that just me as somebody that has the ability financially to be able to make this decision. It should be any person in the state of Idaho that has kids should be able to make that decision for themselves on where they want to send their kids and what type of education they actually want to have their kids have. So for that, I'd say this should get your green light easy, and please pass this bill. Thank you.
Further debate on the motion. Good gentleman from 11.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To debate the motion.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you. So to reflect the opinions and comments from the good gentleman from District 28, I echo many of those sentiments. I feel my main objection with this bill is that it takes the role of government out of its proper role and expands it into the sphere of privatized education and putting more control over that, and I have an issue with that. I feel like the bill is, I hate to use the words, but I feel like it's another type of a social welfare program. I don't feel that it's not that we don't have choice. I think that's a common misnomer. We have school choice. Parents have the ability to educate their children how they see fit with the funds that they have. And I get that it's more difficult for some than it is for others, and I totally respect that. But I don't feel like it's in the place of the government to parents should not have to go to the government and ask for permission to get their money back so that they can educate their kids with that money. The final point I'd like to make here is that the people that have been pushing the hardest for this bill are the lobbyists. I've received emails and calls from a couple of parents in my district and around the state who have they've expressed a desire to get this bill pushed through. Largely, the people that have raised objection to this bill are the homeschool parents. And I have received literally hundreds of emails of very respectfully crafted and individually tailored emails from homeschool families, as well as public school families all over the state of Idaho. And I have to respect the wishes of those people and honor the constituents who elected me. And I thank you for the time.
Further debate on the motion. Gentleman 25.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To debate the bill.
Has the floor.
Yeah, first of all, I want to recommend the good lady from 32 and all the sponsors on this bill, but I want to explain to you why I can't support it. This week, a supporter of the bill came to me and asked me, do you support school choice and House Bill 93? And I basically said, that's two questions. I support school choice, but I have a difficult time with House Bill 93. And so I'm going to explain to you some of the reasons why. Because I think it has some basic flaws the way it was drafted. We have choices in Idaho. We have many choices, and people that oppose a bill like this, generally speaking, say, well, what do you mean we need more choice? We have charter schools, home schools, we have open enrollment, we have private schools, and we have Empowering Parents grants. I've supported all those things, although I have some reluctance now on the Empowering Parents grants that we're doing. But we do not have an efficient way to allow families of low income to move their children from a public school or any of those other choices into a private school or education plan of their choice. This bill will reimburse families that have already made the choice. Most of them are already in a private school. So we're talking about $50 million. Now, there is a limit in this bill that talks about that you have to qualify for some aspects of it to be under 300% of the poverty level. 300% of the poverty level for a family of four is $90,000. $90,000. And I'm going to, and of course, some of these might be families of three, which would have a lower, but there could be some families of six or eight, and so the dollar amount goes up with that. And I don't have a problem with having some form of a means test, because I think that was a good decision by the sponsors of this. But we're talking about right now having about 17,000 private school students. Some people say it's 20, some people say it's a little less than that, but there's roughly 17,000. And many of these are average families. Many of these students are in families that are going to automatically qualify for a tax credit. They're already in a private school and they're automatically going to qualify. So we're not increasing those students into the program. And once the application period doesn't come to an end, but gets to a point, I can't remember the exact date, then it opens up to anybody that has income above 300%. And guess what? That's virtually every other private school student in the system. So I can't see us ever falling short of spending the $50 million. But then there's some other little problems. And I guess the point I want to make is this is not going to significantly increase the numbers of students that have never been able to afford a choice to make a choice. It's going to be mostly reimbursing families that have previously made a choice. Now, they can use the money for qualified expenses, and they provided in this an advance payment. And that's basically, it's not the exact words, but basically a student with 300% or below can get advance payment because they don't have any money to pay the first tuition to qualify for a tax credit. So they can get an advance payment. The problem is nowhere in the bill does it say, do they pay it back? That same student, family, can use the advance payment and then qualify for a full $5,000 tax credit in that tax year, and then get that tax credit. But it doesn't require them to use that money to repay the advance. Now, if you're an employer and one of your employees comes to you and says, hey, I get paid in 2 weeks, but can I get an advance on my check? You know what that means. That means that you have to pay it back. It's going to come out of your check. Excuse me. In this case, there is no provision for that. So I had a nice conversation with another gentleman that's very supportive of this bill yesterday, and he says, oh, it's not an advance, it's a grant. And I said, well, it doesn't say it's a grant. You know, he says, they don't have to pay it back. And I said, well, where in the fiscal note does it say there's $50 million of tax credits and in so many millions of dollars of advances? So I have a little bit of a problem with that. And I think it could have been technically written a little bit differently, but the advance payments is a good option if we're going to do this, but we might as well say they're a gift, they're a grant, it's something that's never going to be paid back. If we look at the numbers of students out there, private school students, there's roughly 17,000, as I mentioned. If we take half of those students, that might be a little high, but we took half of those students and said they're going to qualify for one of these tax credits. That's going to at $5,000, that's $42.5 million. So that means that there's $7.5 million for everybody else. And we don't know how it's going to work out. And if it's passed, I hope it works out better than some of my numbers. But this is the most expensive way possible for us to get more kids into choice. Do we want to support choice? Or do we just want to give back to the families that have already made the choice some of our tax funds? Another flaw to the bill that I see, no, it's not a flaw, but it's something that I disagree with, is that a good idea is that we're going to have a survey made and that every parent has to fill out a survey if they're going to qualify for a renewal. But why are we having our legislative services office do that? They're supposed to be helping the floor, helping the legislators with their work. It just seems like a misconnection to ask legislative service offices to do that. I can imagine if I walked up and I asked them, hey, I'm a legislator, I'm wondering, can you guys do this? And they'd probably want to say, yeah, we have the ability to do that. But should they be doing that is a question. That should be the State Board of Education or the State Department of Education. I was told yesterday of the $50 million that $10 million was targeted for these advanced payments. And I think that was in a prior version of a bill, but it doesn't exist anymore. So again, I'm not sure if the fiscal note, they can cap it at $50 million, but I'm not sure how the advanced payments are covered. Why does this gain support? One of the things, it's simple. It's a very simple way to do school choice. I don't know of any other state that's ever started with a major school choice program by doing it this way, but it is a very simple way to do it. And I think we all want things to be as simple as possible. And the other reason a lot of people want it is because they can say, I voted for school choice. And so finally, I just want to say is I cannot support this flawed bill, and I'm going to probably be labeled as anti-choice. I've been labeled falsely before, and I can take the heat on that. But this doesn't allow more Idaho families to get more choice. This is mostly reimbursing existing families that have paid the money to get a tax credit back. So they can label me as they wish, but I will not give up, and I don't want you to give up on the possibility, because I support the idea of low-income families having a choice to have a way to pay for private school, just like we do with many other social-type programs that some people don't like social programs, but we do it with Medicaid. We do it in so many different ways to help low-income families. And I think we need to be doing something, but I can't support this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
And once again, that was some of the testimony in the Idaho House today. The House voted 42-18 in favor of a bill from Republican Representative Wendy Horman of Idaho Falls that would send taxpayer money to private and religious schools through tax breaks for parents who have children in private schools or who homeschool. The money would come in increments of $5,000 per student for private school tuition or $7,500 for students with disabilities. Representative Klo is who you just heard. He's from Twin Falls. And a Republican. You also heard in that section Republican Lucas Kaler of Caldwell, Republican Josh Tanner of Eagle, and we started with Republican Representative Stephanie Jo Mickelson of Idaho Falls. Representative Klo has sponsored a separate private school funding bill in the legislature this year. There are two private school funding bills in the legislature besides Horman's bill, one in the House and one in the Senate. Republican Representative Klo sponsored the bill that would create education savings accounts that could be spent on tuition and other private school and homeschool expenses. The bill would also create an income tax deduction matching the amount of funds eligible students spend on private school tuition. That new bill is the third active piece of legislation for private school choice moving through the State House. Klo's bill is specific to students transferring out of public schools. Students already attending private schools would not be eligible. Klo told the House Education Committee this week, these are not funds that are going to people that have already made that choice. Eligible students would receive a spending account using a portion of their per-pupil state funding that goes to public schools. Currently, the per-pupil dollar amount calculated as a statewide average is unknown. And you're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. Extended Friday edition will be back in a moment.
KRFP is sponsored by Mikey's Euros, specializing in Greek and Middle Eastern cuisine, such as Euros, falafel, hummus, and tabbouleh, located at 527 South Main Street in Moscow.
KRFP is also sponsored by
Hodgins Drug and Hobby of 307 South Main Street in Moscow. Hodgins features a pharmacy, educational toys, and hobbies. Hodgins also sells and services hearing aids. You can call Hodgins at 208-882-5536. KRFP supports progressive values, including multiculturalism and environmentalism.
Tune into Live on KEXP, exclusive live performances recorded in the shadow of the Space Needle. On the show next time, it's the sample-friendly indie pop of Spirit of the Beehive. It's one-of-a-kind sessions from your favorite artists and from a few you're about to discover. From our studios in Seattle, it's live on KEXP.
Coming up Saturday at 3 p.m.
Don't touch that dial. You got it right.
We're up in the morning when it first gets light, and we do it all day. Then we're up all night so you can listen to the radio.
You got it right.
You can listen to the radio.
You've got it right.
Listen, listen, anytime you listen, everybody's on a mission, and there ain't nothing missing when you listen to the radio.
Listen to the radio.
You've got it right.
Community radio.
Listen, you give a little listen to the radio.
Radio Free Moscow.
Fight Back Radio.
It's 90.3 on your radio dial.
Fight Back.
Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for your support. So keep on listening, and listening, listening.
Fight Back.
You're still here.
Radio.
Fight,
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 fight.
And we have news from the Washington legislature. Legislative Democrats in Olympia have pushed back on right-wing viral criticism of their votes against a proposed revision to the Republican-sponsored Parental Bill of Rights. The Democrats on the Education Committee voted against amending House Bill 1296, which would have required school districts to immediately notify parents if a student is a victim of sexual misconduct by an employee. The criticism on social media platforms and the Elon Musk-owned X, formerly Twitter, left out the fact that previous Washington law still in effect requires the Department of Children, Youth, and Families to, quote, at the first opportunity, but in all cases within 48 hours of receiving a report alleging sexual misconduct or abuse by an agency employee, notify the parents or guardians of a child alleged to be the victim, target, or recipient of the misconduct or abuse. Republicans say Democrats are gutting the parental rights bill, which the legislature passed last year. The spokesman review reports a post by U.S. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas on the issue in Washington State, calling the amendment insane, received 49,000 likes on X, formerly Twitter, and was shared 13,000 times. House Majority Floor Leader Democratic Representative Monica Stonier of Vancouver said the 48-hour window, which is currently a law, allows schools and officials, quote, to get the facts clear so that accurate information is provided to the right adults who are responsible for the child. Democratic State Representative Lillian Ortiz of Self made similar arguments during a January 30th House Education Committee meeting. Stonier said, as a person who has been directly asked why I intend to keep information from parents, as a teacher and as a parent, I find that claim unprofessional. And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, the National Weather Service has issued a winter weather advisory for tomorrow for the Washington and Idaho Palouse, the Central Panhandle Mountains, the Lewiston area, and southern Nez Perce County plus Lewis counties. Snow is expected, total accumulations between 1 and 4 inches. The winter weather advisory will be in effect from 1 p.m. tomorrow until 4 a.m. on Sunday. Plan on slippery road conditions and slow down and use caution while traveling. The forecast for the Moscow Pullman area is calling for 80% chance of snow tomorrow, mainly after 4 p.m. Patchy freezing fog between 1 and 4 p.m. New snow accumulation less than 1 inch possible, high 29. 80% chance of snow Saturday night. New snow accumulation 1 to 3 inches. The snow will be mainly before 10 p.m. Patchy freezing fog between 10 p.m. and 3 a.m., low 21. 40% chance of snow on Sunday, mostly cloudy, high 29. Little or no snow accumulation expected. 30% chance of snow Sunday night, mainly before 10 p.m., low 16. And a 30% chance of snow, partly sunny on Monday, high 25. And then the weather gets colder, according to the extended forecast. Monday night, partly cloudy, low 2. Mostly sunny, high 17. Tuesday night, partly cloudy, low 2 below 0. And mostly sunny, high 21 on Wednesday. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ, there's a PayPal option, and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. I'm Lee Robartis, Brenda Cox, and Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors, including Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tiedye-everything.com.